Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including programs like Florida Forever, Everglades Restoration, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation. More information online at fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The long-awaited legislative showdown on fracking hits a key Florida Senate committee.
And I don't think I've seen a better tap dance than what the department did today on the subject of trade secrets and the disclosure of these chemicals.
Also tonight, a Senate panel approves a 10-vote minimum for death penalty cases.
Because the only other state that's not unanimous is Alabama, and they are at 10-2.
We'll also get updates on proposed gun legislation, alimony law changes, and efforts to build more hospitals in Florida's rural areas. I'm Tom Flanagan. With just 2 weeks and 1 day remaining in this year's Florida lawmaking session, this is Capitol Report. One of the most controversial bills in the 2016 legislative session was put on life support today in the Senate Appropriations Committee. Jim Ash reports what's hanging in the balance could be the future of the oil and gas industry in Florida and, critics insist, Florida's environment.
When Republican Senator Garrett Richter of Naples presented his industry-backed fracking bill to a Senate subcommittee a few weeks ago, he took on a roomful of environmental critics almost single-handedly. That angered Senate Appropriations Chairman Tom Lee.
You know, I'm so disappointed that the proponents of this bill won't stand up here behind Senator Richter and explain to us why this is good public policy.
When he appeared before Lee's committee on Thursday, Richter made sure he brought the cavalry, including Department of Environmental Protection Secretary John Steverson. Richter told the committee his critics were confused by emotion. He was backed by science.
Today, many well-intended, but quite frankly, misinformed people are going to testify against this bill.
But the cavalry may have showed up too late. The bill was voted down after more than 2 hours of debate, but supporters used a procedural maneuver to put it on hold. Backers stressed the bill would ban fracking for a year while a scientific study is conducted. But Democratic leader Arthenia Joyner of Tampa wondered why a study would be necessary when fracking has been linked to everything from flaming tap water to minor earthquakes.
When they dropped the atomic bomb, did we wait till they dropped it on Florida to determine whether it would be harmful?
Richter began working on his bill 3 years ago when a Texas company was caught using a fracking-like technique in Collier County in his district. Fracking generally involves using a high-pressure stream of water and chemicals to blast oil and gas from rocks as deep as 2 miles underground. But that's not the only way to frack, said Jennifer Hecker, a lobbyist with the Nature Conservancy of Southwest Florida. Her group originally supported the bill until she realized it didn't cover another technique called matrix acidation that was used in Collier County.
Things don't have to necessarily fracture the rock to pose the incredible risks to our groundwater supplies.
It didn't help Richter's cause that Steverson stumbled on the most crucial question of the day. When he was asked directly whether he had the power under existing law to stop fracking now, Steverson couldn't give a yes or no answer.
By the law of the state, by the law of this body, I cannot view the applicant based upon their technology.
Nor could Steverson's deputies explain how the bill protects trade secrets for the oil industry, but still allows the public to know all the chemicals used in the fracking process. Republican Senator Jack Latbaugh of Clearwater was less than impressed by Richter's experts.
And I don't think I've seen a better tap dance than what the department did today on the subject of trade secrets and the disclosure of these chemicals. And until I get comfortable with that issue, I'm a no on this bill.
Republican Anna Terry Flores of Miami echoed most critics who wonder if the bill has to have so many safeguards. Why consider fracking at all?
That just leaves us with too many unanswered questions as to what does fracking mean for our environment? What does fracking mean for our children? And I think the major question is, are all these risks worth what we would be getting in return?
It's not clear when or if Lee will schedule another vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
The Florida Senate took its shot at compromise this week for a new capital sentencing scheme. Nick Evans reports the chambers are trying to find common ground between unanimous jury recommendations and a supermajority.
To answer some of your concerns, and I think there was a little bit of confusion on how this works. And I think
this was the scene a week ago on the House floor.
The person has to be found guilty unanimously. Every single one of those 12 jurors has to find that person guilty of that crime.
That's Carlos Trujillo, a Miami Republican and former prosecutor. He and a couple of other House Republicans have taken the lead on revising the state's capital sentencing system. The U.S. Supreme Court invalidated Florida's process earlier this year. And coincidentally, the ruling came down on the first day of this year's regular session. So, naturally, lawmakers have been scrambling to come up with a process that would meet judicial scrutiny. Trujillo explains the new proposal has three different phases. After a unanimous finding of guilt, the jurors have to agree on one or more aggravating factors.
Every single one of those 12 people have to say one aggravator exists. And after they take that vote, 10 of them still have to say, you know what, even though one aggravator exists and we all agree to it, we should also put that person to death. That's the bill that we're presenting today.
It's that last vote, recommendation for the death penalty, that's been the point of contention. And the House's 10-vote proposal is actually a compromise. Here's Senate sponsor Greg Evers, a Republican from Baker.
With them at 9-3, us at unanimity, we felt like that the 10-2 would put us, there's only one other state that has a 10-2, and that's Alabama. There's 48 states that's unanimous. But we didn't want to be the only outlier at 9-3. So that's the reason that we went with the 10-2.
Actually, that's not quite right. 19 states don't allow the death penalty at all, and among the 31 that do, 4 have a governor-imposed moratorium. And speaking of governors, Florida's Chief Executive Rick Scott is not wading into the fight over jury unanimity.
I can tell you that the hard days are, you know, the days that you have an execution in the state. The hard days are when you go through clemency to try to figure out how you do what, you know, go listen to those individuals that have committed serious crimes and how you do it the right way. So it's a solemn duty. If there's a bill that makes it to my desk, I'll take the time to review it.
There's little doubt changes will make it to his desk, but there is some. And it grew just a bit Thursday in the Senate Appropriations Committee.
We're going to show this bill temporarily postponed. Members, we will go.
That's Fort Myers Republican Senator Elizabeth Beniquisto holding the gavel for the committee. Many state lawmakers support the death penalty in principle. And without a new capital sentencing system, Florida defendants can't be sentenced to death. Senators brought the measure back up a few hours later after trying to work out a different compromise closer to the original Senate position of unanimity. The panel quietly approved the bill, and now it heads on to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Still to come on Capitol Report, think trains are only found on railroad tracks? One kind of train is actually found in the Florida legislature.
I believe the title of the PCS is an act relating to education. So the proposed committee substitute contains a title that's broad enough to fit everything but fracking in it.
There are a couple of new gun-related laws on the books in Florida.
The goal is for people who are not committing a crime that they won't be subject to the 10, 20, or life provision if it's ag assault only. So this is great news.
Lawmakers are considering a change in the state's alimony rules, and while some worry the move could hurt women, others disagree.
Women are not helpless. 50% of the workforce is women.
And lawmakers wrestle with the need to provide more and better health care to people living in Florida's outlying areas.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
A massive education bill covering everything from a teacher bonus program to school construction is rolling out of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Lynn Hatter reports it's getting to the point in the legislative session when trains start to leave the station.
Trains. It's a term given to a bill that ends up with a bunch of other issues tacked on. Although Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner tried to stop this legislative train from leaving the depot.
Amendment 741272 is out of order on the Senate Rule 2.39 per rand 2C and 7.13 because the amendment is a proposition on a subject different from that under consideration in CS for SB 524.
Translation, Joyner argues a 60-page amendment filed with varying other education proposals violates a rule that says bills have to be limited to a single subject. She argues the rest of the education ideas in the amendment are not germane. But as Appropriations Chairman Tom Lee notes, the definition of what is and is not relevant is pretty broad.
Senator Joyner, we have, I believe, hang on just one second. I believe the title of the PCS is an act relating to education. So the proposed committee substitute contains a title that's broad enough to fit everything but fracking in it.
So how many other issues did get added on?
The federally connected student supplement, which provides funding to school districts to support the education of students connected with federally owned military installations, which is...
Here's Republican Senator Don Gates explaining his multi-subject amendment.
The competency-based innovation pilot program, which establishes a five-year pilot program to promote competency-based student learning, which is the subject of Senate Bill 1714 by Senator Brandis.
And it goes on. Included in the bunch of issues are changes to how school construction dollars are awarded. The bills say charters can only be eligible for such funding if they're serving needy students in targeted areas. But a portion of the train bill drawing the most debate outside of the bill itself is language that relates to the Best and Brightest Teacher Bonus Program. It's for teachers with high ACT and SAT scores, and it's been controversial since the state established the program last year. Gates argues it's a recruitment tool, but Republican Senator Alan Hayes says the program is not fair.
I would urge anybody and everybody devising such a system, don't make it insulting to those teachers that have been in the career for decades that are highly effective, and yet just because they didn't score high on that particular test, they're ineligible for this program. I think that's insulting to those teachers, and I think this is a very good amendment and would urge your support with it.
The Senate Appropriations Committee defeated Hayes's amendment, but Republican Senator Jack Latvala alludes it's not the end of the debate. The fight could hit the chamber floor, and that's where the train bill, formerly known as an act relating to state university system performance-based incentives, is now heading. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Governor Rick Scott signed a number of bills into law this week. As Sasha Cordner reports, among them, a pair of gun-related bills that have the backing of law enforcement and gun rights groups.
A number of stakeholders gathered around Governor Rick Scott and applauded him Wednesday after he signed a bill into law making it a misdemeanor for anyone to discharge a firearm in residential areas.
This was sponsored in the Senate by Senator Richter. In the House by Representative Cumby, Representative Rusan. I want to thank them for their hard work.
The new law by Polk City Republican Representative Neil Cumby immediately took effect Wednesday.
This bill is a product of discussion between the Florida Police Chiefs Association and the National Rifle Association. The discussion was prompted by the growth of shooting ranges erected sometimes in haphazard fashion, and fired upon in residential neighborhoods around the state.
Some exceptions to the bill include accidental discharges and a person lawfully defending themselves or their property. For St. Petersburg, Democratic Representative Daryl Rousson, this was personal. He tried and failed to get a similar bill last session.
Governor, thank you so much for signing it into law. And I also want to thank Representative Neil Comey when he called me this summer and we talked about it and we figured out that we could work together on making sure that this happens. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity to have done that. And shout out to Lakewood Estates Homeowners Association, where the issue arose a few blocks from my house, and I'm glad we were able to do something about it. Thank you again.
That's good, Bill.
And Naples Republican Garrett Richter, the bill's Senate sponsor, had nice things to say as well.
I want to thank my counterparts in the House. It's always rewarding when you get to be associated with legislation that makes sense. And this is a good, commonsensical piece of legislation for the state of Florida.
Florida Police Chiefs Association President Brett Raley says the new law is a priority for law enforcement.
We truly appreciate the support that we got from our partners in addressing this critical issue, in keeping our communities safe and still preserving Second Amendment rights. And Governor, we really appreciate you seeing the importance of this and signing this for us.
The NRA's Marion Hammer didn't attend the bill signing, but in the past had called it a good bill.
This was simple language to give law enforcement some clarity that they asked for, to give them enforcement ability to protect neighborhoods. And NRA is happy to join the police chiefs in supporting Senator Richter's bill.
Meanwhile, the governor signed another NRA-backed bill that makes changes to Florida's 1020 Life Law, also by Cumbie. It removes aggravated assault from the list of crimes that carry mandatory minimum sentences.
What I've tried to do as governor is listen to police chiefs, listen to sheriffs, listen to state attorneys. And, you know, this was legislation that was supported by our law enforcement community, and so it made sense, and that's why I signed it.
Cumbie says he's heard of a few cases where people are serving 20 years in prison for threatening to use force with a gun, for example, in self-defense.
In aggravated assault, no one's physically harmed. There's no physical contact. That's battery. So we've got people sitting in prison who've never touched anybody. There's been no physical harm. They've not stolen. They've not swindled anyone. But yet, under this law, they have been sentenced to 20 years in prison. This will fix that, and everyone seems to agree that this is the fix.
The new law takes effect July 1st. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Lawmakers have a raft of bills aimed at making changes to the state's family law statutes this year. Regan McCarthy reports one measure focuses on the state's alimony rules.
A measure that would make changes to the state's alimony rules is moving through the legislature. Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell says her bill creates a formula for how alimony should be awarded and puts new benchmarks in place for when an alimony payment should be modified.
So what it's doing with the award of alimony is trying to remove the emotion from a situation that is very emotional for all people involved and moving it to the financial decision.
One reason the bill would let a person ask the courts for an alimony change is retirement. Stargell says the bill also allows people who work in professions that don't include a typical retirement age to approach the court before retiring.
If you're in a profession like law enforcement where it's not a set date, the bill affords you the opportunity to go in prior to retirement and say, hey, court, am I an age that would be acceptable to retire? And then once you have actually retired, you then have the ability to go to the court and request a modification of your alimony. But it does not mean it goes away. It's a request for modification.
Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner doesn't think the provision is needed.
Isn't it true that a person who was retired nominally without this bill still would have the opportunity to go before the court and ask for a modification just based on the fact that the income would be significantly decreased? Because isn't the standard now, aren't there some standards that say when you go in, when there's a material change in income? So why do we need to codify that you can go when you retire?
And Barbara Devane with the National Organization for Women, or NOW, says the people who receive alimony are often women who left the workforce to raise their children. Devane says a provision in the bill would allow a person to seek an alimony modification if the person they are paying receives a 10% salary increase. And she says for a woman earning $10 an hour, that would mean a pay bump up to $11.
Maybe you go out and you can find a little job after staying at home all these years and you're older, and there is age discrimination in hiring. And also, you're way behind on your skills at finding a job, keeping a job, getting a job, and you get a $10 an hour job, and you get a $1 an hour raise, and now you're making $11 an hour, and you have to go back to court because your ex-husband's going to run, try to get a modification.
Devane says the women she's talking about likely wouldn't be able to afford a lawyer to represent them. But on the other side of the argument, Natalie Sohn says she finds NOW's arguments offensive. She says women are not helpless.
I'm a lifetime payer after only 14 years of marriage. I'm a physician. I work 60-hour weeks. I support three children in college. There is no way that I can possibly pay my ex-husband, pay for my own self, pay for my three kids in college, save a little bit of money for retirement, and possibly work forever.
Meanwhile, Stargell points out the measure gives courts plenty of room to make case-by-case decisions.
Throughout the entire bill, there is the ability of the courts to go outside of those parameters if they have if they feel best they have that total discretion.
Stargell's bill also includes a provision creating the presumption that in a divorce, it is in the best interest of the child to split their time equally between their parents. The measure passed a Senate committee Thursday. Another measure that includes a provision to split a child's time between both parents has passed on the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Supreme Court today upheld a ruling that a rental car driver's constitutional rights were violated after she was nabbed by a red light camera for a traffic violation. Justices in a 6-1 decision sided with June Darr, who in 2012 was detected running a red light in Broward County while driving a vehicle from Dollar Rent-A-Car. The rental car company received a notice of the violation, which led it to submit information identifying Darr as the driver. Darr sought to dismiss the case because she did not receive the notice of violation, which included a $158 penalty. Instead, she received a $263 uniform traffic citation, which was issued after the notice of violation went to the rental car company. A Broward County judge agreed with Darr and dismissed the citation, which prompted an appeal from the city of Fort Lauderdale. The Fourth District Court of Appeal in 2014 ruled that Darr's equal protection rights had been violated because short-term renters were treated differently from other motorists, a ruling upheld today by the Supreme Court. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, state lawmakers continue to butt heads on health care reform, specifically where new hospitals can be built. Both chambers want to improve access to hospitals, but the devil is in the details, as we hear from Kate Payne.
In order to build a new hospital or revamp an old one, the state has to sign off. That stamp of approval is called the Certificate of Need, and the application process for that certificate can take months and cost tens of thousands of dollars. Critics say the CON is a barrier to healthcare access. That's why Representative Chris Sprawls of Clearwater wants to repeal the process entirely.
What you will see here is the same focused approach that focuses on removing regulatory barriers that hinder competition and disincentivize innovation by removing CON's requirements for hospitals and hospital reviews.
But some worry loose regulations would disproportionately favor insured Floridians. Here's Representative Alan Williams of Tallahassee.
What prohibits
one of these facilities from cherry picking, you know, taking, you know, the healthy sick person, if you will, versus the one who may not be, or the one who may not be able to afford it, and the person who can't afford it, who may have their own private insurance. What prevents that cherry picking of those individuals?
While the House paints with a broad brush, the Senate is taking a more nuanced approach by focusing on rural health care. Some rural hospitals are already exempt from the CON, but Sebring Senator Denise Grimsley wants to do more.
There are currently 5 hospitals and 11 eligible counties that qualify for this exemption. The change in the population density would exempt an additional 19 rural hospitals from CON review process.
Gail Bellamy runs the Center for Rural Health Research and Policy at the FSU Med School. She estimates some 2 million rural Floridians struggle to access quality health care.
They may not even have a stoplight. You know, they definitely won't have a hospital. They may be 25, 30 miles away, you know, from the nearest great big hospital, which if you're really sick, that is not a short distance. You know, so, but 2 million? 2 million is bigger than West Virginia. 2 million is bigger than Rhode Island.
Bellamy argues that healthcare needs can vary widely from county to county, and each should get the care that best suits that community.
If you've seen one rural community, you've seen one rural community. It depends on where you are in the country. It can depend on where you are in the state. You know, if you go up north to Gadsden County, which is the highest proportion of African Americans in a county in this state, you drop down to where Immokalee is, and you start seeing large numbers of immigrant, not just Hispanic, but also Haitian.
That's why Senator Grimsley wants to make it easier for rural hospitals to set up shop.
Henry County has 38,000 people, and it has 1,190 square miles. It's a huge county. They, at the time, wanted to rebuild closer between, to be more central between LaBelle and Clewiston, because right now all the LaBelle residents are having to go to Lee County for their health care. At the time, they just couldn't afford the CON payment. It's a community hospital.
Grimsley's bill has one more committee stop before it reaches the floor. Meanwhile, Representative Sproul's bill is ready for a full vote in the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including watershed and springs protection, gulf restoration, wildlife and fisheries conservation, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.